You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. It is Saturday night, April the 29th, our last installment of Confederate History Month 2023. Keith Alexander here with me. I'm your host, James Edwards, and we are going to be talking about the firing of Tucker Carlson this hour. Before we put those finishing touches on our annual Confederate History Month series, we've got two great, informative, entertaining, comfy guests to put an end to this rollicking special series that we've now done for so many years. But before we get to that, for the benefit of the 10,000 plus followers I had on Twitter who might be wondering where I am this weekend, I'm certainly no longer there. Let's start with that. I have been banned from Twitter. I was so irritated by it, in fact, that I had to engage in the cathartic exercise of writing about it. I want to thank Jared Taylor and Kevin McDonald for posting it without even being asked, which was quite nice. And, of course, I'd rather spend more time talking about more important things. But since, again, we had a pretty large following on Twitter who might be wondering why I'm not there anymore, I want to start with a quick word about that, and then we're going to move on. So I did post a statement to the website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, this week. And for the benefit of those who haven't seen it, I'm just going to quickly work my way through it. I joined Twitter in 2016. 7 years, never once received a warning or a reprimand for content that was posted there. This wasn't my second or third strike. This was straight to online assassination that went to a permanent ban. Very Kafka-esque. No reason was given. I didn't conduct myself. Listen, if you're a regular listener of the program, you know I conduct myself professionally, and I've always tried to responsibly present our arguments. I don't quarrel with individuals on social media. In fact, I don't engage other users, good, bad, or indifferent. I just don't do that. Didn't engage in any profane or crude rhetoric on the platform. So simply put, by no reasonable standard of measurement could it have been argued that I violated even the most ambiguous terms of service. But this was just another case of naked censorship. And that isn't my first time to experience that. I was banned by Facebook and PayPal in the mid-2000s, long before it became altogether commonplace for dissidents to be banned from everything. And at this point, I could pretty much list to you the things that I haven't been banned from. That would be far more quickly than the things that I have been banned from. I've been banned from just about everything, including Amazon, YouTube, and every known credit card payment processor in the universe. And I've known no other reality. This goes back to the very first couple of years we were on the air. And it was because of this repressive censorship that I was relatively late to join Twitter. I didn't even join until the fall of 2016. And we caught on fast. Within weeks, Hillary Clinton herself was featuring my Twitter account in campaign ads against Donald Trump, if you can believe it. Do you remember that? I've got the screenshots still. And, of course, the work here at TPC had been covered and targeted by many print and broadcast media outlets well in advance of my tenure on Twitter. We'd been on the air for, 12 years before I joined Twitter. But there was no doubt, and there is no doubt, that Twitter boosted my audience and it led to a greater exposure. And by the time the end came on Monday morning, my tweets were routinely gathering thousands, sometimes tens of thousands, or even hundreds of thousands of views. One recent tweet generated more than 1 million views, which in truth is probably the reason I've been taking out. There were no tweets that were posted within the last few days of my tenure there that were over the top. I always have a buttoned-up presence online and publicly and frankly, privately as well. The very last tweet, if you want to know what was the very last thing I tweeted out, it came just after the show last Saturday night. I tweeted a link to the fundraiser of the little girl who had been shot in the head by the black man for the ball rolling in his yard in North Carolina. That was my very last tweet. And I guess in some ways, I mean, ultimately, why was I banned? Because I'm a pro-white dissident and I have a pretty big audience. So I guess the only real surprise was that I was able to last for 7 years there. But I'll tell you this, having experienced it so many times and by so many different platforms, when it comes to arbitrary censorship, which is what this was, the interesting thing is that you just never know when or why you'll be taken out. As I said, I certainly didn't do anything to bring this upon myself. The timing of these things is just always random. You just wake up one day and you're gone. And in the meantime, there are, of course, a limitless number of minority racists whose accounts are littered with obscene, hate-filled rants that call for the actual murder of white people. But, of course, those accounts are safe. But interestingly, I wasn't the only one to be shipped off to the Twitter gulag this week. At the exact same time that I was shuttered, so too were Dr. Kevin McDonald and Dr. Tomislav Sunich, among others. And, I mean, these guys are legitimate scholars whose voices deserve all platforms. But still, if the party has to end, it's always better to leave with friends. And so there I was able to. And it was not lost upon us that we all survived the previous regime only to be banned by Elon Musk's operation. Now, one commenter said that we could take these bans as a high compliment, as well as, quote, an independent verification that you all stand on the moral high ground of truth and courage, unquote. Now, sure, at least we have that. That's true. But at the same time, you don't want to work up a following of thousands and thousands of people just to have it be dispatched into the ether. So it'd be disingenuous for me to tell you that it isn't somewhat maddening to have that happen, to have a large following be evaporated on a whim. Like most people, I don't like being violated. But what I like even less, and this is the thing I want you to take away from this, and again, we're only spending one segment on this, and then we're moving on to more important things, but I don't like to hear men whine about things not being fair. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm only mentioning this because I want people who followed me on Twitter to know what happened. I'm not there anymore, and I'm not coming back. I have long possessed an admiration for the Machiavellian nature of our enemies. They have done to me exactly what I would do to them. I respect them for that. They have set the rules, and we should remember them when the shoe is put on the other foot someday, God willing. I do not now, nor have I ever believed in the equality of individuals or of ideas. We are right and they are wrong. And if I were in control, I would be eager to do to them everything within my power to extract the anti-white woke agenda from our society, root and stem. And so I give the enemy credit for being more ruthless than our people are. We are still too noble for our own good. And while we ought not lose the moral compass that separates us from our adversaries, we must see things clearly. So, hey, something like this, it's an adversity, it's an obstacle, but you take your medicine and you move forward. You move forward, and whether it's something as trivial as a social media ban or other situations when the stakes are much higher, the thing you have to remember is to never, ever, ever apologize for our positions. Do not recant your positions. Do not behave in times of difficulty in a way that brings dishonor to our cause. Never apologize for being right. And at the end of the day, I remain thankful for the opportunity to serve this cause, and I hope that whatever example I can set can be done for the greater good of our collective. So that's it. The show must go on, and it's time to get back to work. We will get back to work without the 10,000 people who were following us on Twitter, but nevertheless, we will continue on the best we can, as always. But Keith, who I'm going to bring on in the next segment, was asking me, when he got to the studio tonight, you know, what does this do to it? Well, it doesn't help. It doesn't help our bottom line. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You can't just say, you can't look at it and say, well, you know, if you really think about it, losing 10,000 people is a good thing for us. If I had thought that, I would have disconnected my Twitter account myself. Definitely not a good thing, but we will continue on with your help. And we'll talk about that when we come back. I'll tell you what, Tucker Carlson had a worse week than I did. We'll talk about that too. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, last week in Confederate History Month. We're going to have a good time tonight, folks. Stay tuned. Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject from the Spanish Civil War to the funding behind the transgender movement. Antelope Hill publishes books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo and brings real culture to the reading public at an affordable price. If you count yourself as a political dissident, then you owe it to yourself to check out the Antelope Hill catalog, with exclusive offerings like Rebel Mountain by Kurt Eggers, a brand new reprint of the infamous You Gentiles by Maurice Samuel, and now the treatise of a January 6th prisoner in the American regime. There is something there for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out the complete catalog today at AntelopeHillPublishing.com. That's AntelopeHillPublishing.com.
I'm James Edwards, and I want you to check out AntelopeHillPublishing.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then, the more they use the lie, the more they reproduce the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Now look, the media is a lie multiplier. And this multiplication gives more evil spiritual power to the beast. That power protects the cells of the beast from prosecution. Why isn't Hillary in prison? She is protected. We must restore our national relationship with God. Truth is sacred in the kingdom, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. Isaiah 9:6.
A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
All right, got to bring Keith Alexander on to talk about this. Then we're going to move on to Tucker Carlson and much more this first hour before we wrap up Confederate History Month. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that we've already been feeling a little bit of a financial pinch this year due to the rising cost of goods and rampant inflation. So anyone who's willing to chip in right now with some support would be most welcomed. I cannot overstate that. I don't like fundraising during the quarterly fundraising drives when we absolutely must. So I certainly don't like doing it outside of that time.
But the problem is we really have no choice because we're not going to get big corporate sponsors, people like CNN, MSNBC, people like Bud Light, people like Chick-fil-A that always flock to these left-wing outlets and personalities. So we have to depend on average people, which is what we are and what our listeners are, to come through for us.
And then it's not even as easy as just making a quick couple of clicks and contributing with a credit card. I mean, people literally have to get out a pen, get out a checkbook, put a stamp on an envelope, send it in. So I don't like asking you to do that, but it does help. Listen, the fact
that's the only way there is.
We've never received a grant or a bequest. Ever. In all of the years, all of the people we've reached, all of the news that we've made, that might surprise you, but we have been funded all of these years by mostly small donations. I mean, what's small? $100 is a lot to me. But I don't mind being candid with you about this. We've always been very transparent about everything. But yeah, anything, if you're saying, well, they've got so many listeners, you know, $50, $25 doesn't make a difference, but it absolutely does. And losing the Twitter, losing this social media account along with all of the others, I mean, collectively it does take a sting.
Well,
so
what it did more than anything, it gave you a profile, a large profile in the in the movement. It basically put the political cesspool up there with groups like Ameren and Occidental Observer and VDare because of your popularity on Twitter.
Well, we'd done good there, and we'd certainly done well before there. I mean, we were on the air for 12 years before Twitter, and God willing, we'll be on the air for many years post-Twitter. But any event, anything you can do, if you value our work, if what we do here brings you hope and information and encouragement, you're our last line of defense. Without you, we will falter. So every bit does help. And again, due to that censorship and deplatforming, we can't process credit card contributions. So we need you to step up. We need you to step up. If I didn't need it, I wouldn't ask. If we had a huge grant or a huge request that was funding all of this, if it wasn't the $25 and the $50 and the $100 donations, I would never ask you for anything. But folks, we do need it. Now let's get back to this, Keith, because I want to move on to Elon Musk, Tucker Carlson. The inconsistency of these arbitrary bans is noticeable, though. I have friends and colleagues and guests on this program who have either much larger or much smaller accounts and followings than I had, who have either been banned or not banned. And I know people who are much more or less controversial in the post than I was on social media who have either been banned or not banned. It seems as though following size and posted content doesn't seem to factor in much at all. You really just can't make sense of it. Now, somebody posted...
I find it suspicious, though, that once you got a million hits on one of your posts, then within a week you're gone.
Guess what that post was? What? Can you guess what the one that got a million views and got covered by a lot of media outlets was?
Happy birthday to Elon Musk or what?
No, it was us mentioning that the SPLC attorney had been tied up in that arrest for domestic terrorism, yeah, charged with domestic terrorism.
That's when you stopped preaching and started meddling in the eyes of the
I thought we were supposed to make good trouble, as Dr. King put it. But in any event, if I had to guess, this was a comment on Kevin McDonald's website. If I had to guess, Elon Musk knows there are certain people and certain organizations out there that can destroy his businesses, as Kanye West learned. So perhaps he quietly bans the ones that they tell him to while he drones on about free speech for everyone else. That's really the best I can come up with. As to why I was banned now instead of 7 years ago or 7 years from now is anyone's guess. But on the bright side, I joined Brother Jared Taylor in Twitter heaven. He was waiting for me there with welcoming arms.
Playing his harp.
Actually, both Jared Taylor and Peter Brimelow sent me emails of condolences to the expiration of my social media life, and that was nice of them to do. But yeah, I mean, Jared, I mean, this is another guy who's just entirely gentlemanly, entirely polite, and he got banned from Twitter years ago. So there just really is no rhyme or reason.
Is a rhyme or reason, and I told you what it is. Is it good for the Jews? If it's good for the Jews, you'll stay on. If it's not, you'll be gone.
Adrian Davis, and we'll use this to segue into Tucker Carlson. Adrian Davis said that his theory, I have been a little email chain with Adrian and a couple of other usual suspects, and he said that his theory is that the popular and most important accounts are targeted, whereas more obviously extreme accounts with small followings are left alone as a sop to free speech. That's pretty, could be it. But my own take, this is Adrian speaking or writing here, on Elon Musk's decisions and on Fox's unpersoning of Tucker Carlson is that peer pressure affects those at the top of the pile no less than the strivers. Above a certain level of wealth, it's hard to see what more money can buy you, especially if, as with Musk, you sleep on a camp bed at your business so you can work insanely long days. He does, however, talking about Musk, like to be invited to the best parties in liberal cities. I suspect that Tucker couldn't give care about such invitations, but Musk does, and the Murdochs do. So we'll see how things...
Particularly the Murdoch kids, who I think are gaining control of this, they are just typical New York liberal Jews, just like Jared Kushner. And they probably were getting a lot of flack about Tucker Carlson from the people at their cocktail party circuit, and they decided just to pull the plug because they'd heard enough of it.
Well, the system will collapse when normie cons withdraw their consent from it. Now, we may still be a little bit away from that day, but it does seem to still be getting closer, my little setback with Twitter. And I'll miss talking to all of y'all there. I will miss the interactions, but, you know, again, the show must go on.
Free up a lot of time.
I absolutely will. I don't think I didn't consider that. That is just one less thing, as they say. But in any event, if I thought it would be a good idea to unplug, I would have unplugged myself instead of being unplugged by God knows who. And who knows? But there did seem to be some sort of a list, because I went at the exact same time as several other of our
Confederates. Like it was like a Saturday night massacre. Now, let me ask you this.
Bloody Monday.
Right. Think about this. What was the reason behind the firing of Tucker Carlson? I want your opinion.
Okay. Well, I mean, again, so this is interesting. Tucker Carlson was cashiered on Monday morning, which is the exact same time the axe came down on yours truly and McDonald and Sunich and several others. When Tucker Carlson signed off on his Friday night show, he said, "We'll talk to you on Monday." It looked like everything was just a normal business as usual type of thing. And then he found out of his firing. And then by Monday morning, it was known that he was not going to be on the air anymore. They didn't even give him a chance to say goodbye to his audience, which no forewarning, no anything. And this isn't just some random contributor to Fox News. This was the biggest cable news host in the world, the most popular show in the world of its kind, not just in the United States. And he doesn't even get the chance to say goodbye. Now,
Vladimir Putin has offered him a job with Russia Today. Can you believe that?
People are saying perhaps it had something to do with the Dominion lawsuit, although he didn't factor in very heavily with that. He didn't factor in very heavily compared to some of the other personalities there. People are saying, well, there was this Jewish woman who got reassigned to the Tucker Carlson show.
Abby Grossman.
As a staffer, and she said, of course, quite naturally, that she was subjected to misogynistic and anti-Semitic behavior, and so you got a lawsuit there. There's another lawsuit from somebody else, but I'm sure these
somebody
people
noticed she was a woman.
I'm sure people, these people, anytime you reach that level of fame, you're going to be probably hit with lawsuits all of the time. I really don't know. I couldn't tell you why it happened at that exact time.
Well, I don't think it was a coincidence that you, Tom Sunick, Kevin McDonald, and Tucker Carlson. Well,
that's just there was a
fell.
Lot more than me.
Yeah, there are a lot of it was a Saturday night massacre on Monday morning.
Well, look at all of the stuff that's gone on, Keith, just in recent weeks. Just not even going back to the early part of this year. Donald Trump's indictment and booking, and Tucker Carlson, what happened to us and others, many others. I mean, we've only mentioned Kevin and Tom because they're regulars on the show. The Charlottesville indictments happened last week. You got this guy at the January Sixers. You got this guy that put his feet on Pelosi's desk facing 47 years. I mean, all of this is happening simultaneously.
The big question is, why now? Is it have anything to
well,
do with the election
thing. Are
cycle?
They, well, I, it's the, that's the question. Are the powers that be feeling particularly powerful or particularly vulnerable? What's going on? I mean, I've been banned from everything, so the bans aren't anything new. It's just the timing.
I think it's a vulnerability. They do not want educated, good, cogent commentary that is negative towards them. They want people to be in the dark, and they don't want the only people that are talking about it to be people on the fringes.
So much more. Yeah, that's pretty much what Adrian Davis's conclusion was. But in any event, we will be back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jerry Barmesh. A search is underway for a man accused of killing five of his neighbors north of Houston early Saturday. San Jacinto County Sheriff Greg Capers says children are among the victims.
Two of the juveniles were found up underneath two of the deceased women that were in the bedroom. In my opinion, they were actually trying to take care of them babies and keep them babies alive.
Police say they had previous complaints about random gunfire coming from the suspect's property. In Columbia, South Carolina, nine people were shot at a park during the overnight hours on Saturday. The victims range in age from 16 to 20. Two teenagers were taken into custody fleeing the park, and a gun was recovered, but it is not yet known whether they were involved in the shooting. The FBI reports a dramatic decrease in warrantless data searches.
The number of searches under the warrantless surveillance program dropped nearly 94% over the past year, according to a new report by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. FBI Director Christopher Wray was questioned by Representative Ben Klein over the data during a House Appropriations Committee hearing this week.
Did our national security threats drop 93%, or had the FBI been conducting millions of unnecessary warrantless searches of Americans' private communications?
Well, so first, I would disagree with you that what was described in the report were warrantless searches of Americans' communications.
The report states those numbers fell from 3.4 million to roughly 200,000. I'm Jeremy Scott.
The State Department says hundreds of Americans have been evacuated from war-torn Sudan. It's estimated 16,000 Americans were believed to be living in Sudan before fighting broke out in the streets of Khartoum. Two banks are bidding to take over First Republic as U.S. regulators seek to calm markets. J.P. Morgan Chase and PNC Bank are the likely bidders, the Wall Street Journal reported. The floundering First Republic would be seized in receivership and sold to the winning bank. This is USA News.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for health care can save the typical family $500 a month, and that's huge, but it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. Very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Oh, it's not like it used to be.
The calendar is driving our Confederate History Month series down. This is the last night of it. That song, though, what a beautiful ballad, rock ballad. Rolling Stone magazine listed it as the one of the top 200 songs of all time, if you can believe it. A song that
Twitter has driven old James down.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's the truth. But yeah, well, listen. Final word about that. It was interesting. Honored how many people saw that and reached out. With some words of sympathy, Nick Griffin had said, reached out and asked me what was going on, and he said that there was two people in the UK, and I won't mention their names. They haven't been guests on this show, so I'll tell you that much. But they very much barter in the exact same type of trade. They are people that have a similar message. And one of them was banned this week, and one of them received a gold certified account. And they're almost
figure.
Yeah, inseparable in terms of the content. So it really doesn't make sense. But again, folks, we do need your help. We do need your support. This is definitely not going to be anything that bolsters our standing, and so we need your help. But again, the Tucker Carlson thing, Donald Trump, J6, the Charlottesville indictments, a lot of stuff. Weird. It was a weird Monday. And then Don Lemon even got canned. I mean, I don't know. Just to add a cherry on top of the weirdness.
Well, they say battle lines are being drawn. Nobody's right when everybody's wrong.
Young people, people speaking their mind.
Getting so much resistance from behind.
All right. Well, anyway, let's talk about this, Keith. There was. I had intended to spend the entire 3 hours tonight with a very big and sensational send-off to Confederate History Month. We had to cut into that a little bit with the news of the week with Tucker and whatnot, but there was an article that was sent to me. Normally, I read all of Paul Craig Roberts' content anyway, but I had missed this one, and it was sent to me by a longtime friend and supporter in Arkansas. And as soon as I saw it, I immediately posted it to the website because Paul Craig Roberts gives permission for anybody to do that. And it was so good to me that I had planned originally before I got kicked off of Twitter, before Tucker Carlson got fired and so on and so forth, that I was going to read this paragraph by paragraph this first hour and have Keith sort of dissect it. But time doesn't permit for us to do that anymore. But we'll give Keith a crack at it anyway. The name of the article is, well, actually, that's a separate name. But anyway, well, you can find it at the top of the thepoliticalcesspool.org. I think it's just a couple of items down on our blog roll here this Saturday night. It's actually, the third thing from the top. But it's a Paul Craig Roberts article, and he's talking about Reconstruction, Southern Soldiers, and Today's U.S. Armies. You read it, Keith. What are the takeaways? What are the points that the former Secretary of the Treasury and most recently our guest back in February was trying to transmit to the audience in this piece?
Well, he uses Reconstruction and the typical tale that is spun by the left and by all the court historians about Reconstruction as an example of the misinformation that we have to endure in America today, supposedly the land of the free and the home of the brave. Reconstruction was not some gallant effort to raise the standards for black people and to get those horrible white people in the South to stop persecuting them. It wasn't it at all. Basically, it was an effort and an opportunity for the enemies of the South, like the radical Republicans, to come in and ride roughshod over the rights of the Southerners, to steal their businesses, to rape their women, to take over their government, to use the tax authority to steal their property, things like this. It's the reason why a lot of Southerners moved to the West. People like Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, people, you know, they left the South, and the reason they left the South was because there was so much persecution of white people in the South, white Southerners, that they wanted to escape it. And that's why, as they've said, most Westerners in the old Western spoke with a Southern accent, because that was indeed the type of people that populated the West. So that's what happened, and that's the story on Reconstruction. Reconstruction was, you know, the war was not about slavery. That is a gloss that the left has put on it since then. Now, there is some way for saying, there is some basis for saying that it started midway through the Civil War when Abraham Lincoln was trying to figure out desperately some way to keep England from joining the war on the side of the South, and slavery was the issue because they had in England ended slavery in 1833, about 30 years before, and many English by legislative decree, and because of that, there were a lot of people in England that slavery issue resonated with, and they knew that that would keep England from joining the war on the side of the South, even though all the, you know, best thinkers, people like Charles Dickens, for example, knew that slavery was not the issue. It was basically the fact that the northern states were using the tariff taxation against the South to finance the industrial development of the North.
Let me say this about that, as they say. I think one reason that the Confederates and the Confederate leaders and the Confederate privates and the Confederate society as a whole should be celebrated this month and forever amongst the entire canon of men of the West and people of the West is that they were pro-white. They were racial realists. And if that, in addition to all of the war exploits, their valiant battle against oppression and tyranny and all of that, it should be remembered. But this too should be remembered. They were pro-white. Now, was
everybody was that had any sense, including Abraham Lincoln.
Well, okay, real quick on before we get to that, though. Was slavery the end-all and be-all of the war? Of course not. Did it play a factor? Sure it did, and especially so, as you said, Keith, after Lincoln needed a political prop when the war wasn't going his way about halfway through in 1863. I mean, of course, Alexander Stevens and the Cornerstone Speech, of course, some of the Articles of Secession from the various state governments mentioned slavery. I'm sure, I mean, it wasn't a monolithic issue. Some people probably needed it, but I think that slavery wouldn't, I mean, I know slavery. Let me put it, I know slavery wouldn't have lasted forever in the American South or in the Confederate States had it won the war, just like it didn't last indefinitely anywhere else in the world.
Well, you know, he
except
says,
for non-white countries. Now, it would have, here's my thoughts on slavery. It would have eventually faded away with the onset of mechanization. The war from the Union's part, the war from the Union's point of view was about power, money, resources, consolidating empire, just like practically every war is about. It's about the bottom line. It's not fought ideologically. It's fought for land, for resources, for material. And again, in Lincoln's case, I think for empire. And Paul Craig Roberts gets into some of this in this piece.
Yeah, well, look at what America's foreign policy had been up until 1861. Basically, the controlling document was the Monroe Doctrine. We were going to tend to matters in the Western Hemisphere. the Eastern Hemisphere, that's where Europe and Asia is, that's where all the action was as far as wars and whatnot, we were not going to get involved in it. But there were people that had another opinion about that, and Lincoln was one of them. Of course, you know, you realize that he was a pen pal of Karl Marx and asked Karl Marx for advice, for example, which Marx was glad to give him. They wanted America to use its enormous wealth and resources to be a world power as a staging ground. They were not going to let us sit out the wars. And as you can see, after the Civil War, we were not allowed to sit out wars. We were not allowed to sit out World War I as we should have. We were not allowed to sit out World War II as we should have.
And we would have, or at least there would have been a very much weaker United States empire that would have been fighting in those wars without the help of the South, which is the backbone of the American military.
And why
in the world are they fighting for a country and a government that hates them and wants them dead? I will never understand
Paul Craig Roberts' point, which we'll go into after these words from our sponsor.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
The crowd cheered. There's actually a little bit of history. This is Confederate History Month, after all. Some actual real history in that song. The lyrics tell of the last days of the Second War for Independence and all of the suffering that the South was experienced.
Oliver Richmond on May the 10th, 1865.
That time in the story, in the song, in the lyrics, Confederate soldier Virgil Caine served on the Danville train. That was the Richmond and Danville Railroad, a main supply line into the Confederate capital of Richmond, as you just mentioned, Keith.
And that's where Robert E. Lee and his army were trying to use that to escape to North Carolina to join Joseph Johnson's army in North Carolina, but they weren't able to make it.
Union cavalry regularly tore up the Confederate rail lines to prevent the movement of men and material to the front where Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia was besieged at the Siege of Petersburg. And we just had John Hill, the last living descendant of General A.P. Hill, who died in that siege. And as part of the
10 days before Appomattox.
As part of the offensive campaign, Union Army General George Stoneman's forces tore up the track again. So talking about how the South was hungry, just barely alive. The Confederacy starving and on the verge of defeat.
See, the South had less than half as many people as the North, did not have the material, did not have the industry. Basically, it's remarkable and a testament to the quality of their soldiers and their generals that they were able to hold out as long as they did against the Union troops. Basically, Robert E. Lee's army was one-third the size of the Army of the Potomac, but Lincoln could not find a general that could beat him because he was so good and because his soldiers were so good.
The writer of the song, Robbie Robertson, claimed that the music came, I believe he was Canadian, which makes this very interesting. The music came to his head, but he had no idea what it was going to be about. Now, one of the band members, Levon Helm, who sings the lead vocals in that song, was from Arkansas, and his family was from Arkansas. And Robbie Robertson, who wrote the song, said that it just one day the concept came to him, and he did some research, and he wrote the lyrics to the song. But he continued. He said, when I first went to the South, he met Levon Helm's parents. And he said he remembered the quite common expression would be, don't worry, the South's going to rise again. And he said the first point he heard it, and he thought it was kind of a funny statement, but then he kept hearing it. And then Levon Helm's parents said it to him when he visited him at their house. And he said he was really touched by it.
And it's a great song, and it was the biggest hit that Joan Baez ever had, which is ironic since Joan Baez was one of the primary promoters of the civil rights movement.
Covered it. And he said, the writer of the song said, quote, God, I keep hearing this, and there's a pain here. There's a beautiful sadness.
Well, anyway,
I just want to say we sincerely hope that you've enjoyed. I know we're wrapping it up tonight. I just wanted to say, I hope you've enjoyed this year's tribute to the Confederate History Month. It's certainly been our privilege and pleasure to present it to you. I know we still got a couple of hours left, but if I don't get a chance to say it later tonight once we start having guests on, I wanted to say it now. And by the way, Keith, in addition to Tennessee, there were several other states like Mississippi and Alabama. Alabama just officially declared April is Confederate History Month. All of the Alabama state offices were closed one day last week for that.
Yeah, the South has not forgotten in the hearts of people in the South, white people in the South in particular, and also one of the things that Paul Craig Roberts pointed out is that our military, the backbone of the military, which is about 1.5 million people in the U.S. military in all branches, 36.3% of the personnel in the armed forces of the United States come from four southern states, Texas, Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. And I'm sure that if you put all of the southern states in there, it would be well over 50%. These are people who are being denigrated by the powers that be that run the armed forces now under this woke regime that we all live under now. And these people are the people without whom America's military could not win a war. We couldn't win a war against
Cuba.
Well,
that's what, you know what? That's what Adrian Davis was saying earlier in response to the Tucker Carlson and all. By the way, I just got an email from Paul Fromm in the last segment. I just read it. Paul Fromm, too, was banned from Twitter on Monday morning. So I would really like to know exactly what, and I didn't know that because, of course,
how many, but Paul is he's number one guy in Canada.
But listen, here's the thing, though. If for one person to be canceled, you could argue, well, why did it happen? Why now? Why then? What was the offense? But for all of us to be canceled at the exact same time, it goes to show that there was obviously a list that was sent to someone from someone. Because for all of us to be banned at the exact same time on the exact same day, that's not a coincidence. Yeah. That's an organized strike.
Right, yeah, that's a, that, this is a coup d'etat. This is what...
I tell you what, we're going to have Paul from Tom Soonage, Kevin McDonald, all on in the same hour next week, and we'll see if we can flesh this out. That'll be our first thing we do post...
Also, if there's anyone else in the movement that got knocked out on Monday, let us know, because, you know... The more the merrier. We need to find out what's going on. But anyway.
Well, what I was going to say, Keith, in addition to that, well, I've got something written here. I don't even know what that says. It says something. I can't read my own writing. But anyway, Paul Fromm, maybe something to do with Tucker Carlson, but I can't. Maybe
well,
it'll
so
come to
let's
me.
Talk a little bit now about Carolyn Bryant, okay. Donham Bryant, who... passed away this past week.
Now, that's going to give another 60 years to the Emmett Till story. It's going to be breaking news for another 60 years now that she's refreshed it with her death. That's another thing that happened this year.
Tombstone territory in Arizona was a town too tough to die. The Emmett Till story is the story too good to be forsaken by the left. Now,
I think it was Steve Saylor who said one time, the New York Times is your one-stop shop for up-to-the-minute breaking news on the Emmett Till murder, because they have not stopped reporting it breathlessly, and that's the media at large,
see,
of course.
And
but
the reason you know that the Jews are behind all of this is that just like former Nazis like Adolf Eichmann and so on, they will not give up. They were chasing Carolyn Donham Bryant, the wife of Roy Bryant and the sister-in-law of J.W. Milam, who were supposedly the guys that murdered or had a hand in the murdering of Emmett Till. They, you know, she supposedly was the one that initiated it all by telling her husband about the so-called wolf whistle. First of all, it was much more than a wolf whistle. Secondly, she did not tell her husband. Her husband was told by a black guy that used to hang around the store and work there occasionally, trying to curry favor with Mr. Bryant. And Mr. Bryant did indeed give him 50 cents worth of store credit for telling him that, okay? So Emmett Till was sold out by another black for 50 cents.
All right, but,
but see, that is what is important about this. And then they tried, Carolyn Bryant, they brought Emmett Till by there, and she said, that's not the guy. Trying to deflect it. She did not want her husband to know about the whole episode because she knew he would fly off the handle about it, which he did, obviously. But then they brought him by after they got him 4 days later, and she said, no, that's not. And then Emmett Till spoke up and said, yes, I am. I'm the one. You know, it's like he had a death wish, okay? But don't blame Carolyn.
She was
Donald
hounded
Bryant
for her entire life, all the way to her death, and now on to the ever after. She will continue to be hounded by these sick, degenerate, hate-filled people. And to me, I don't care about Emmett Till. I'm sorry that he was murdered. I don't advocate for murder for anyone.
There are 200 Emmett
Tills
almost... more than that, every year being killed in places like Chicago.
That's the thing. It's the media's treatment of this woman now that she has finally, mercifully, been called home by the Lord.
At age 88.
The treatment of this woman that she had to endure for her whole life. She was the one who was violated. She told somebody about it. So what? So what? Is she responsible for the action of that somebody else took
it's
in that case?
It's not like she may. If she had told somebody, it wasn't a lie. She actually had been sexually harassed by Emmett Till.
The media's treatment of this woman her whole life, and now after her death, because of course she's back in the news again, the way that they have turned Till into a martyr, and we've seen this more recently with many young black males, but it was a murder. Okay, not a good thing. What about all of the murders, the untold? I mean, 10-1
there's
ratio
carnage.
when it's.
I just saw something that said that Milwaukee, 95%+ of all the murders are done by blacks who are less than, you know, half of the population.
You brought this up a couple of weeks ago on the show. Why aren't we getting movie of the weeks for Channing Christian and Christopher Newsom's story?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Why the media could bring them up quarterly and make them historic figures.
Yeah, you will know that the worm is turned in America when they start giving the same type of attention to Channing Christian what's the guy's name? Christopher Newsom.
They don't care. The powers that be, they don't care about blacks. They don't care about Emmett Till. They only care about the dispossession of whites and vilifying whites and subverting.
And stirring things up.
Well, that's exactly all there is to it. I mean, this just what it was a murder.
It's like Tombstone Territory. They will not let it die. They want to continue to keep things stirred up. They are looking to start a race war in America. That's what the left has in mind. That's the purpose they thought that Emmett Till's death would serve. And it did start. It kicked off the Civil Rights Movement, which was one of the saddest periods of time in Americans' history, because it was the beginning of the triumph of liberalism that we're all suffering under to this very day.
I hope that this woman rests in peace. I would tell her, I would put a public message to that effect on Twitter if I could, but I can't, and I'm not the only one. So something's up, something's going on, but we're going to put all of that aside, and we're going to come back and wrap up Confederate History Month in these next 2 hours. We got a lot to get to come May. 2 months of special series, March Around the World and Confederate History Month, is about to wrap up. And then it's back to busy work and a logjam of guests waiting to get on. We'll be back.